Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Fairfax. We hope you enjoy this sermon from a recent Sunday worship service.
In some ways, for a very long time, Ralph Waldo Emerson was thought of, in my opinion, as sort of a patron saint of Unitarianism. Not Universalism, but Unitarianism. This, in part, was certainly based on his belief as stated in his Harvard Divinity School address from 1838, where, according to EmersonCentral.com, the source of all Emerson, he critiques traditional forms of Christianity and religious institutions and calls for a new kind of spirituality based on individual experience and personal insight. Where he also argues that organized religion and its institutions have become stale and irrelevant, and that people should seek a deeper understanding of the divine through intuition and experience. And even more so, he emphasizes the importance of individuality, self-reliance and self-discovery in the spiritual realm, and calls for a return to a more authentic and personal form of spirituality. 1838. Now, this is certainly different from the rugged individualism I spoke of last week that pervaded the Marlboro Man American experience, but still a form of emphasis on the individual. Now, I'm not decrying the need for us to recognize the importance of individuality. What I'm saying is that all entities, like countries and families and organizations of all types, and yes, even faith communities such as ours, have emotional, spiritual, mental, and institutional DNA that runs from generation to generation. And part of our DNA has been a sense of the individual as primary importance in how we define ourselves as a country and in some ways as Unitarian Universalists. Emerson also said the true preacher can be known by this, that they deal out to the people their life passed through the fire of thought. So, passing this month's theme of interdependence through the fire of my thought, I couldn't help but think, in a different era of my life, I used to be part owner of a bakery and cafe. We used only the freshest ingredients and made everything from scratch. Later in life, when I was an executive director for the American Heart Association, I used to say that it was my penance because the bakery used to go through 2 68-pound blocks of butter a week. I don't even want to think about the cardiology issues I may have caused in my life. I wasn't really the baker. I was the front of the house, run the business kind of guy, but you got to know I tasted everything. And at one point I had a friend who used to call me Pastry Dave. It's not that funny. A name I deserved but didn't really appreciate. Anyway, the bakery had extraordinary cakes and pastries, and certainly one of the goals was to make them in a consistent fashion. Something that I'm not sure Emerson would have liked very much, because in his essay on self-reliance, he railed against the pressure society puts on individuals to be consistent, and felt like consistency and conformity can lead you away from listening to the inner voice that allows you to be your authentic self. I have to say, I certainly get this, and in some ways I agree with Emerson. We have to listen and support that inner voice, those thoughts and feelings that allow us to be the beautiful and interesting individuals that we are. But I also used to be part owner of this bakery. And what I saw was a whole different understanding of what it meant for individual things to come together in ways that would create something new and beautiful. One of my favorite recipes was the coca mocha truffle torte. Say that 10 times fast. There, of course, was sugar and salt and cream and chocolate and flour and Kahlua, all individually wonderful ingredients, all belonging to different food groups, all used for a wide variety of uses, all important on their own as flavors, all grown or produced in very different ways from very different parts of the world, all necessary to make a coca mocha truffle torte. It almost seems silly to say, but if you made a coca mocha truffle torte with 2 cups of salt instead of 2 teaspoons, it would not be anywhere near as delicious. If there was way too much sugar, you know, that would also be the same. You get the point. However, hopefully, when this is complete and baked and ready to be eaten, you can see the different layers. They each have their own distinct flavor, consistency, and character, and yet, when taking a bite, they come together as a delicious taste treat. You can almost taste each and every ingredient that's now something new and beautiful when brought together, dependent on each other if you're actually going to make a coca mocha truffle torte. Which reminds me of another food-related metaphor, which has been commonly used in the last number of years, about a salad bowl or tossed salad, which is now more widely appreciated as a metaphor for the way a multicultural society can integrate into different cultures, rather than the melting pot idea of America, which for many years was thought to be a metaphor, which emphasizes the parts of different parts coming into a single whole defined by the dominant culture. These food metaphors are the metaphors for the day. Did you get that? Finally, a sermon about food. I'm so happy. So here's the point about all these food metaphors. I'm worried about whether we will be able to follow a recipe of interdependence to ever create the beautiful cake of beloved community, as defined by Dr. Martin Luther King, as a community in which everyone is cared for, absent of poverty, hunger, and hate. I'm worried that one of the ingredients that will spoil this recipe is the need for excess individualism that has so often been touted as so vitally important to the story of this country. I'm worried that we are now in a cycle of what one might call beloved community backlash, where there is a desire to make each cake a variation of white cake with vanilla frosting. One of the struggles of what interdependence means is the concept of balance. There must be a balance of ingredients in order for us to achieve any notion of beloved community, and how practicing building beloved community is a messy and challenging and at times exhausting thing. Building beloved community takes care and intention, and it takes celebrating individuals and also making sacrifices. Building beloved community takes listening and reflecting on whether our individual needs are in line, more important, or less imperative than the needs of the community as a whole. It may be obvious, but I'm in a place where I think UUCF, Unitarian Universalism, and this country, and in fact the world, have got to come to terms with the fact that in the long run, we are totally interdependent, whether we ever get to beloved community or not. Because there's another thing that's important to remember. This is not 1838. We know so much more about how what we do impacts our friends, our neighbors, and the world in which we inhabit. Here's what I do know. On any given day, this community can feel so much like beloved community that it's a pretty tasty thing. What I constantly hope for is that each one of us, as hard and as messy as it can be, is out in the world living in such a way that if we're trying to identify the ingredients of beloved community, we would see ourselves as part of that recipe. At times, it certainly seems the closer we get, the farther away it becomes. But the only way we will ever get there is for us to keep taking these ingredients and baking them in the oven, because with the right recipe and the proper balance, we still have to believe that we can serve up something beautiful and delicious that we can make together. May that be so, and amen.
Thank you for listening to this sermon from the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Fairfax. To listen to more sermon podcasts, go to uucf.org/worship-services and scroll down to Sermon Podcasts.